Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of I Know Right, my podcast for and about recruiters. So, boy, I'm taking on a subject today, which I'm not sure I wanted to take on, but I feel like I have to because it's tax time and all my recruiters are coming in and saying, where's my money going? So I want to talk about something you guys have a love-hate relationship with. Recruiters love to make money. They hate to save money. They hate to talk about saving money. And your eyes glaze over whenever I try to get you to save money. So I just decided enough. I don't know how else to try to talk you guys into saving money. And I really don't have much credibility because I'm just a guy that runs a search firm. So I decided to bring in a big gun. And we're so pleased to have as a guest today, Phil Fiore, who you'll see his bio on the web site, but suffice it to say, Phil's had an amazing career as a wealth advisor. Right now, he's the CEO of Procyon Partners, but he's been in the business for over 20 years. He was on Barron's list of the top 1,200 advisors in the country. Earlier, twice, he was on 401k Wired's list of the top 300 wealth advisors in the country, and I've known him for many years, and he's a very good friend. And Phil, thanks for taking some time.
Danny, it's my pleasure, and thank you very much.
Yeah, so, and here's another reason why, to get personal right from the start, I wanted you on it, aside from the fact so Susie Roman said no, is you and I come from the same cloth. Your parents are first-generation Italian immigrants, and so I think when a lot of people hear that we have some big-shot wealth advisor on the show, they think Wall Street guy, born and raised in some prep school, went to some Ivy League elite school, always had money, always will have money. What does he really know? But you came from the ground up and your parents taught you what the value of a dollar was. I'm curious when your life went to, wow, my whole life's going to be about making money. Did you know that at some point? Was it the fact that your parents struggled to get money that made you say, this is really what's important to people?
Yeah, you know, Danny, that's actually a nice place to start, I think. And you're right. My parents are all both Italians. I'm first generation Italian and working since I was 13 years old. And, you know, growing up, I will tell you that we didn't have, in retrospect, we didn't have a lot of money, but I don't remember wanting for a lot either. I mean, I remember having a very, very comfortable life. My parents were excellent savers. You know, my dad bought a couple of multifamily homes throughout his tenure and seemed to live very, very well. And my dad, at the top of his game, did not make a lot of money. He was a very, you know, low middle class provider. So it was all about saving. And I think what my parents taught me was that there's nothing you can't do. Number one, you're right. I don't have a trust fund. I didn't go to Ivy League education. And yet we've had a 20 plus year career on Wall Street and a very successful one at that with my partners and I. And so number one, you can go get whatever you want. And number two, work hard, but make sure that you pay attention to the nickels and dimes. In other words, make sure you're putting away the money. And so if things do turn around on you, you're not going to be lopsided or kicked in the nose.
Okay. So that's really at the heart of what I wanted to talk about. So, I mean, you know, you've been in my office. Recruiters are salespeople, right? And sales 101, if you're trying to motivate a team of salespeople, and you've also managed salespeople that are wealth advisors that want to become you. So a salesperson 101 is the way to motivate a young salesperson on commission is to get them to buy something they can't afford, and now they have to pay for it. And that might be great motivation for a rookie in the beginning, but what I have found, and I thought it was just me, but then I started traveling and meeting a lot of people, and I found that all the owners I know say the same thing. Maybe because it's a commission business. Maybe it's because it attracts a certain type of risk taker, neurotic person who feels like, hell, I can spend everything I have because I'm going to make another sale next month and I'm good at this. There's a ramp-up period for rookies, and they know they're not going to make a lot of money the first year, but then they're going to start making serious money. So, I mean, I've always understood okay, I get why she's not withholding the right amount of taxes from her first commission check because she's got to pay her rent. And I understand why you're not paying off your student loan this year, even though I just handed you a $40,000 check, because you want to buy a condo. But I have found 3, 5, 10 years later, they still aren't maxing out a 401k. They don't have any money in the bank and they don't really think about it. It's like tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. Where does that come from? And has that been your experience? Is it recruiters? Is it salespeople? Is it young people in general? What is it?
So I think what you said in the preamble to this, Andy, is very important. That is, salespeople are cut from a different cloth, and I'm one of those, right? And so I'm in that same cloth, and I'll share with you a story. When I first passed my 7 back in the mid 90s, my branch manager at the time said, "Phil, that's excellent. What's your favorite car?" Right? And so, what's your dream car? And I told him about some Mercedes that I liked back then, and he says, "Go out and buy it." And I couldn't afford it, right? It was like, you know, outrageously expensive. But he said, you know, what he was trying to teach me at that point was, I want you to reach for the stars, because if you're hungry enough to go reach for the stars, the type of personality that we as salespeople have will always find a way to go get that, right?
Right.
And so that lesson was very important for me to understand, and I kind of lived my life that way. However, there is a point that you need to kind of reassess that thinking. There's nothing wrong with going for it, Danny, right? There's nothing wrong reaching for the stars. And I would urge every salesperson in every capacity in every industry to reach for the stars. And I don't care if you're 20, 30, 40, 60, keep reaching, right? The difference is, at some point, and I would suspect earlier than later is better, right? Doesn't need to be the first year, doesn't need to be the second year, but at some point as you start to get grounded in your career, you need to start understanding that your expenses will always rise to the level of your income. And you need to understand that phenomena, because whether you're making $1,000 a week or $10,000 a week or $20,000 a week, you will find a way to methodically spend that money. And so it's imperative that as salespeople and as people that constantly reach for the stars, that we treat ourselves and our various savings components as expenses, right? And so they're not in our operating account, Danny, right? We're actually dissecting the money in such a way that money is going into different, what I call buckets, and they're treated as expenses. And so you're kind of living that same type of life, but you're forcing yourself to save accordingly as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, I wish I talked to you back in the day, and I had no, like you, my parents were sort of low middle class, and we probably didn't have as much as you. I didn't feel as safe as you did. But once I started making money at 22 years old as a recruiter, I was like, I don't know how this works. And this was long before you could Google it or jump on YouTube and see a tutorial. So I just came up with this, you may say, idiotic formula, but I mean, it served me well, but I guess it doesn't matter now. But I just decided I was going to ramp it up as I went. So I came up with this formula of I was going to save 1% of my income and increase it by 1% every year. So at 22, it was 1% of my income. At 23, it was 2% of my income. At 24, it was 3% of my income. So, you know, by the time you're in your 40s, you know, you're saving 20, 30% of your income. And I'd already, you know, bought some of the things that I had to have, but that became something I was disciplined about. Like, I've got to increase the savings 1% of income each year. And like you, I wanted my toys and I wanted to travel and I wanted to treat the partner I was with really well. But is there I'm sure there is a smarter formula. Like if you sat down, like, here's what I do, and their eyes glaze over, so I know I'm doing it wrong. I tell them, look, let's talk about the magic of compound interest, what Albert Einstein called the eighth wonder of the world. And I always use the same example. If we take $300 a week, right, at 20 years old, and with a magic, let's call it 8% interest, with the magic of compound interest, when you are my age, you got $1 million. And they just look at me like, I don't have a clue what you're talking about. Like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. It's so hard for them to see them at 60 years old, right? And so hard for them to take that $300 at 20 when they could do something else. Is there like a, like if you were sitting down one of these rookies that I've got that they made 40, 50,000 in their first 8 months, and then their second year, they double it. So now all of a sudden they're making 150 grand and, you know, they think they're Donald Trump. So what should they do? Like, what is a strategy for a young up and coming recruiter who's probably going to make, if we say they're not going to become the best ever, but we put them in the upper percentile, they're going to make between 150 and 300,000 every year that they do their job. How does that person structure it?
Well, I will tell you, Dave, the first thing, and you hit this right on the head. The first thing that the young guns need to be doing, and I know they roll their eyes and they don't care about 6 years old and all that stuff, but I will tell you, there's a famous country song by a guy named Kenny Chesney, and that song is titled Don't Blink. And it's essentially about a 100-year-old guy that gets interviewed, and he said, you know, that 100 years went by in literally a blink.
Yeah. So
the 20 or 30-year-old that's rocking and rolling and doing a great job and is not thinking about what's going on at 60, I will tell you that ignorance is not bliss in this respect. And right. It's just easy enough, Danny, to take money. And maybe year one, while they're making 50, maybe they put away, you know, $5,000 in their 401k. And maybe at 100, they put away $10,000. But at some point, they need to max out that 401k. So at 200 grand, if they're making 200 grand, put away 9.5%, right? Top it out at $19,000, which it will be for this year. That has to be a absolute requirement for these, especially the young guns, because that compounding effect is indeed the eighth wonder of the world, and it will have a dramatic impact on decisions they can make in their 50s and 60s, right? And so I think about it like this. As a young gun, right, as a rookie starting out in any, quite frankly, sales career where it's commission-based, and you're unsure of the income that you're going to make in any given year, the primary savings tool needs to be the retirement savings tool. Put that away. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of the barbell is your operating account, right? The rest of the money, the cash. And that should be paying your bills, right? Your car, your rent, all that good stuff, right? And as you start to establish in your career, you build what I call this middle bucket. And in that middle bucket is your intermediate money. So in my mind, in a perfect world where you have the young guns that are now a little bit more seasoned, they're a little bit more into their career, they're starting to make some cash, what I love to see is essentially this three bucket orientation, Danny, where we're maxing out or pretty damn close to maxing out our 401k, okay?
Yep.
We have operating cash, so we're able to pay our rent and all that good stuff. And plus, we have 6 months worth of cash in that account as a buffer, right?
Right.
The rest of the money, Danny, is going in the middle. It's going in this middle, what I call bucket, this middle intermediate savings account. And that money is being invested relatively conservatively, right? But that money is not necessarily retirement money, but that might be, I want to buy a house, I want to buy cars, I'm going to have kids. All the different nuances that happen in life are assessed in that middle bucket, right? And so that's the perfect scenario that I would take a young gun through early on, again, cash and 401k first, and evolving to this third bucket over their career to a place that they can actually see money, deposit in their cash, max out their 401k, and build a really nice middle third bucket that is truly their savings account and beyond their cash bucket with respect to emergency savings and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, I hear you. So what would you say to someone who comes in and says, okay, what should I do? I have a student loan, and you know, it is staggering to me when I have some of my recruiters who owe whatever, $287 a month, and they cut a deal with I guess there's some sort of forgiveness program that that these student loans are allowed so that you can pay the very minimum. So they're told you can pay $287 a month, or you can pay $39 a month if you want, but then it goes on, and I say, goes on till when? And they show me, and it's till you're 52 and they're 26 years old. So when you see that person who's got that student loan or has credit cards that they're only paying the minimum on. Where does that fit into a bucket? In other words, should they, in your bucket, should the student loans and the credit card become part of that operating money? Like you need to keep, get rid of the student loans and pay off your credit cards every month? Or are they smart in saying, no, I'm going to do the retirement savings and I'm going to put a little money aside, but I'm going to pay the least amount possible on the student loans and because it's low interest rates. And I'm just going to pay the minimums on the credit cards, which I think a lot of these guys are doing. Is that insanity? Do you understand it? What would you recommend to them?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Danny. And I will tell you that I am not one of those advisors that will tell you that all debt is bad.
Yep.
Some debt is actually good, right? And what I mean by some debt is, for instance, mortgages, right? Mm-hmm. A certain level of a mortgage is actually, I think, a good way to take on debt. Right? You don't want too much of a mortgage because it's not deductible and so forth and so on. But a good balanced mortgage makes sense for a lot of people, right? However, credit card debt and those types of instruments are not very good debt. Matter of fact, if you look at the interest rates that's imputed on some of these credit cards, it's insane. And you'll never, ever get out of jail. And what I mean by jail is the debt jail. It's so cost prohibitive that if they have credit card debt, I would implore them to do their best to get rid of that as quickly as possible. On the student loan side, that's another big, huge driver for a lot of these young people that are starting careers with these massive, massive, massive student loans. And you're right. Some of the rates are decent. However, mm-hmm. you can't sit there in your 20s and factor a student loan in your life until you're 50. Now you might not be able to pay $300 or $400 a month in the beginning, but you have to find a way over the next 5 years. Let's assume you graduate, you have a job, you're rocking and rolling in sales, right? You're starting to dig your heels into your career. You have to figure out a way, cash flow wise, to eliminate that student loan within 5 years. It is not a great long-term instrument for anyone. No different than credit cards. Better than credit cards, Danny, but certainly not something that to put on a balance sheet or a P&L for a very long term, that's for sure.
Right, right. You know, and I'm trying to imagine people listening to this and saying, well, it's easy for you guys to say, but I got to have the money to put into these various buckets, and all my money's tied up in staying alive, basically, they're saying. And yet, you know, I live among them, you know, and I see what they do on weekends, and you know, I have the people that tell me I can't afford to max out my 401k, and I've got a big student loan. But boy, Cabo was great last week, and boy, did we have. Do you know what I mean? Like at some point, you know, the answer is you know, it's all about choices. It's like if you want to be, you know, like your country singer friend says, you blink, you're going to be 45. It's really not going to be that far that long from now. And you can either wake up and say, my condo is almost paid for and I got rid of my student loan. And that may mean that this Friday you stay home and watch Netflix and you don't go skiing for the weekend with your friends, or you go out to eat once in a while. And it's hard. I guess, you know, I hear like my father's voice as I say that. And it makes me feel like super old, but I think it was the gift. Maybe you feel the same way. The gift of being in the lower strata of the economy as a young person was like, it was perfectly clear to me that all of this could go away. It was perfectly clear to me that nobody was going to take care of me past a certain point. And I had to take care of myself. And so I would make, you know, in my 20s and 30s, it was like, either I got to make a lot of money, or I got to live like Gandhi. Well, I want to live like Gandhi, so I'm going to make a lot of money, but I also don't want to be doing this for the rest of my life. And I say that, and I don't – look, we're just trying to talk about money here, guys, and nobody's trying to brag, but I live in a new development in a tawny part of Connecticut, and I've gotten to know my neighbors a little bit. And, you know, once you get to know them – and all of these people, younger couples, you know, $4,000 and $5,000 and $6,000 mortgages – and living by a thread, and they have nice incomes and everything, but they never made some of the choices we're talking about. And then there's a handful of us who have no mortgages. We just, you know, paid cash for the house. And it's a little easier to sleep at night. I don't know how, as a wealth advisor, you must like sit down. I know you do because you did it for years with my firm. You have to sit down with these people and say, okay, here's where your portfolio is. And dude, it ain't great. You're spending too much money. What's that conversation been like? Have you been able to get people to wake up before it's too late? How do you handle that?
Yeah, listen, Danny, you said it right before about choices, right? People have to understand and recognize that tomorrow, the thought of I'll deal with that bill tomorrow or I'll do that tomorrow, that tomorrow escapes you every next day, right? And tomorrow never comes. Before you know it, you blink and you're 60, right? That really happens. And I'm 51 right now, and I see it. I saw it happen over the last 25 years. And so the conversation that we're having with people like that, it are indeed that you have to understand that your expenses will rise to the level of your income. So it's imperative that you decide what's important, right? And if it's important for you to get out of debt, then let's make that a priority and let's, through the operating account, figure out a way to eliminate that debt in X amount of years. I'm not saying let's not go out and have beers and drinks on Friday. I'm not saying let's never go out to dinner. I'm not saying let's not go to Cabo. But what I'm saying is that let's look at what we're bringing in our cash account and what we feel comfortable with as a pro forma for the year based upon what's cooking thus far. And let's figure out what we can realistically do at the end of the year, and let's audit that performance with respect to paying off debt. But that has to be a major priority, right? Now, people will say, well, you know what I'll do? I won't give to the 401k, and then I'll knock out the debt. No good, okay?
Right.
The 401k has to come first because that has such a massive impact for you later on, right? And so once you deduct the cash that comes out of your 401k, then you have the rest of the cash pool to deal with the other budgetary items. But it's really, Danny, about choices and getting people to prioritize the fact that, listen, 5 or 6 vacations sound great, but maybe 3 this year might make more sense for me because I can knock out $5,000 of my student loan debt.
Those
choices are imperative. And that's what our team helps people think about, right? Because if no one's talking to you about this, then ignorance is bliss. Because quite frankly, 6 vacations is a hell of a lot better than 3, right? And everyone's gonna make that decision.
No doubt. And you know, we're using sort of obviously selfish examples. And some of this is, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. I want my kid to have what the neighbors have, and I want my kid to have things that I didn't have. So sometimes this money is going, you know, for your children. And I get that, and I certainly get that when it comes to college. But and I don't know if you would agree with this, but I've seen this in my recruiters too. Do you really want that, or do you want to be perceived as someone who has it, and do you need it because everyone else has it? And I don't know. I've just found the really successful people that I've met, they just sort of, they want what they want. They don't care what you do or what you have. I mean, I lived in a condo for years because I traveled so much, and I could always tell people were surprised that I didn't live in this big mansion. And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm single, and second of all, I travel a lot. What do I need a mansion for? But like you, I always had some crazy cars. So it's like, you got to have enough independence and enough, I guess, self-esteem to say, I don't care what you wear, what you have, where you go. I mean, fine, do that. But I'm not going to make my choices based on my income, based on what someone else wants me to want, right?
And
that's
100%.
Hard.
And if you're constantly looking to your right or left in the evaluation of your life financially, you'll never, ever, ever be satisfied, number one, or I think ever get yourself to a place where you can comfortably say, I'm great.
Good, yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, that can't be the benchmark. The benchmark has to be what you believe to be the goals and priorities for your life, right? So, you know, you want to buy a house. Great. That's a great goal. Let's go knock that one out, right? Let's develop a plan to go do that. I want to own my car outright. Great. Let's go do that. I want to put away for my 2 kids college. Great. Let's go do that, right? Those are the benchmarks. Who gives a crap what Joey to my right and Sally to my left are doing, right? Because they could be in debt up the hock. Who cares, right?
Right.
What really matters is your plan and how you execute it, right? That's what really matters.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, nowadays wealth advisors have, just like in any other facet of life, right? There's such amazing analytical tools. You know, back in the day, you know, Phil would say, okay, we want this percentage of stocks, we want this percentage of real estate. And now there's really incredibly specific tools on, you know, what exactly do you want? What do you have? We can project certain things. And you'll know, just like, you know, people are better as far as staying in shape when they use a MyFitnessPal app, because you know exactly now what these nutrients are and how many calories they are. The analytical tools the wealth advisors have are so much better. And so while we're there, let's go the other way now and talk about really successful recruiters. I get this question a lot, and you've probably noticed it when you would walk in the office. Like, people start, when they start to make money, it's like, okay, I get it. I'm going to put money in that bucket that you're talking about. I'm going to put it in a CD or a money market, or they start, quote, playing the market. And I'll get people running into my office and saying, we got to invest in this client that I just talked to, and I'm going to buy 2 shares with my commission check this week. And I just rub my eyes like, oh, you don't have no idea what you're doing. When do you graduate? Because frankly, I don't even remember with you and I, but when do you graduate from I'm putting money in a CD to I have a money manager who's smarter than me, who makes his money based on the growth of my portfolio? And I mean that seriously, because I don't want a bunch of people calling you that you don't want to help. But I don't remember what the level was where you suddenly got interested in me as a client, because frankly, you know, you can do more. You personally can make more if somebody's really successful and has a bigger portfolio. When should somebody, what age, what amount of money, when do you graduate from I put money in accounts to I got people for that?
Yeah, so great question, Dan, and I appreciate that. But I will tell you that the level of income, and even age to some degree, I'll get back to that in a second, but the level of income is relatively irrelevant. And because you could make $1 million a year and spend 980, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, again, I'm going to go back to this, and I hope these guys and gals on your podcast that listen to this, if they walk away with one thing, I want them to walk away with the fact that your expenses will rise to the level of your income. If you just think about that concept, right? I make $1 million a year, awesome. But if you spend 980, who gives a crap, right?
Right. Right.
Whereas the guy or gal making $300,000 a year, but saving 100 is more of a rock star than the $1 million guy or gal.
Right. And so, right, right.
So there's really no progression of graduation, so to speak, Danny, right? Certainly not from the income. It's the savings acumen that drives people like us at Procyon, right? We don't care how old you are. We don't care how much you make, quite frankly. What we care about is that there is an aptitude and a priority to save, right? And the way that we think about that is we put everyone through a planning process. No different than we do with some of our older people that are thinking about, you know, the next chapters of their lives. We even do it for the younger people because they have a plan too. Their plan might be to get married in 2 or 3 years. Their plan might be to buy a house or a condo in 2 to 4 years. Their plan might be to have a couple of kids in 7 to 10 years. Let's plan that out, right? And so it's that planning regimen that allows us to specifically tell our clients, here's what you need to be doing, and here's how we're going to execute it, right? So it's that buy-in that something like that makes sense for me as a person, irrespective of how much I make. If you buy into that general philosophy, then I think any wealth manager, any money manager will want to talk to you, because especially the young people, because you know they have a rising career, and the older people probably have a nest egg that they haven't really dealt with properly if they haven't gone through the planning process.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I can certainly attest to the peace of mind that not only I have, but other people that are senior here have, knowing, because, you know, you literally get this physical plan that you see, and you see the projections, and you know that you're on the right path. And it's tremendously calming, no doubt about it. I want to spend just a couple minutes, Phil, with the other side. So what do I do? And it happens to me, unfortunately, several times a year. I'll get a call from somebody who basically did nothing that we have been talking about. And they'll call me and they'll say, I'm 57. I never saved a dime. I still am a good recruiter and I'll make 250 grand this year. But, and you know, I'll always be told the horrific stories of what they spent on and who they're blaming for losing all their money. But they say to me, I'm 57. How do I still retire with some sort of grace? Or am I going to be, you know, am I going to be the guy driving an Uber at 87 in Palm Beach? What would you do if someone called you at 57 and said, I have a good income, but I've never saved a dime. How do I save my life here?
Well, I can't tell you how often that happens, Danny. And
I bet.
Certainly in the sales function as a profession, that happens a lot because of the cyclicality of the income.
Yep.
But in our world, we deal with a lot of 50-somethings that mm-hmm. they're now out of college. And they're looking at each other saying, oh boy, we you know, don't have any savings, right? We got debt in our house. We got a HELOC. We got lease cars. You know, wow, what do we do? All I will tell you, and there's no magic bullet to this, right? But it's no different than anyone else. It's imperative that we take those people through a process of figuring out what the plan is, right? So if you're 57, and you think you got a little bit more juice for another 10 years or so, or 15 mm-hmm. years, or 5 years, let's figure out what we need to do in order to make retirement happen. Because the issue with retirement, as we talk about it today, that's why it's so important that your young guns, first and foremost, put money away for their 401k. It's imperative that they do that. The problem with retirement today, and it's a good thing, it's not a bad thing, but it is problematic, in that people are living 25 to 30 years, Danny, in retirement, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is awesome, but scary as hell, because think about the bucket of money you need at 55, 60, 65 years old to maintain your lifestyle for 25 years. And
right.
I don't care what people say, Danny. I will tell you that unequivocally, when people retire, especially the first 10 years of their retirement, their spending really doesn't go down, right?
Yes.
They're doing other things. So they're not buying suits anymore, but they're playing more golf. They're going
right.
on more trips. They're traveling, doing all this other stuff, right? And so the whole thought process of, well, when I turn 65, I'll spend half. No, you won't, right? The only way to figure this out, Danny, and I wish I had a magic bullet for those people that are coming to you, but the only way to figure this out is to work it out, by virtue of sitting down and working on a plan to get you to where you need to go, right? And
right.
if you have precise architecture and details around what you want, you can figure out how to get there. But that's the only way to do it. Otherwise, again, you know, this ignorance is bliss thing, you know, before you know it, you're 70 and maybe you're 80 and now you're driving that Uber because you didn't go through the process, right?
Right. You know, I have seen some glorious endings here, like where people go, all right, I screwed up now and I'm 57, but by 62, I'm going to fix this. And they're motivated and driven in a way I've never seen before. And it's quite amazing and impressive. You know, there's no point in regretting the choice you've already made. Let's start right now changing your choices and seeing if we can fix something. And you may not have the retirement that you envisioned 20 years ago, but you'll have one. And better to do it at 57 than at 67. I mean, I guess that's all there is to it. I have one last question I'm just dying to ask you, just because you've been engulfed in this stuff for so long, coming from the background you did. What does money mean to you now?
Well, I mean, listen, money really is a means to an end, right?
No matter what,
it's
right.
the end that you choose, right? So in the beginning, it's my wife and I getting our home, right? And then building another home. And, you know, now I got my big guy, my 18-year-old up at Bentley up in Boston, right? And I got a seventh grader, right? So the intermediate term for us is college, right? And the other means, if you will, the other end, if you will, is the to have retirement. But I want to be able to make the calls based upon my timeline, right?
Yeah.
So everything we've done in our financial career, my wife and I, we've tried to dictate our terms, Danny, right? And mm-hmm. and the reason why planning is so important is that you can dictate the terms by which you want to execute, right? And so what that means is that when I decide I want to retire, I'm going to be able to do it. Whether I do it then or not is my prerogative. But
yes.
I don't want to be in the have to business when I'm 65 or 70 years old. I want to be in the because I want to business, not because I have to business. So
yep.
again,
yep.
money to me is just a way to accomplish what I want to accomplish, right? It mm-hmm. means nothing outside of that, quite frankly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a fabulous message. It doesn't mean anything outside of that. Yeah. And I tell people all the time when they say, I don't want to be obsessed with money. And I'm like, I'm not obsessed with money. That's the whole point of making a lot of money. I wanted to make a lot of money so I would never have to be obsessed with it. I don't worry about money because I have it. But if you don't have it, that's all you think about. And I just never wanted to be one of those people. It's as simple as that. Phil, you've been so generous with your time. I really appreciate it. And I think people here got a lot out of it. And that message, I think, is just going to reverberate. Like, just because you make more money, if you're not putting a handle on your expenses, they will rise to the level of your income. That's a great message. I appreciate you, buddy.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
All right. Take care.